Regularly scheduled programs will not be seen tonight so that we may bring you the NFL live and in color.
From the men who brought you basically a sports show, if your football fix wasn't met on Thursday night, it's time for an additional slice. This is basically a football show right now. Let's go!
Get it in here! I got one thing to say. This is when the big dogs come out. Okay? You can't roll the big dogs. Stay on the board.
Let's knock them on their backs, butt them in the mouth, knock their ass in the dirt. That's what we got to do.
Hey, baby! We're going to be here all day, baby! I like this kind of party. I like this kind of party, baby.
His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
Welcome in to episode 4 of Basically a Football Show. I'm Zach. Along with me is Greg. And Greg, the football's a weird place to be right now,
to say the least.
I mean, whether it's on the results on the field are kind of weird, whether it's in college or the NFL, things are kind of all over the place. And then once you go off the field, I mean, we just had the Ray Rice discussion last week.
And here we are again.
We don't even, in the time that it takes you to edit this, we had another incident pop up regarding Adrian Peterson, and what else needs to happen to this league?
I made a joke yesterday. I was talking to someone. I said they need to start a pool where you can bet on who the next player is going to be that comes out and is in trouble. It's just, I don't even know what to say about it anymore. I mean, I really don't. I'm just kind of at a loss for words. I don't. There's a lot of things that have happened with this. The Vikings, we're going to sit him down, and then they get slaughtered. So, we're going to bring him back and let the legal process play out. I mean, that is just so obviously a reaction to getting beat. You've got the side stuff with Ray Rice still going on. People are talking about Greg Hardy now, Ray McDonald. Mm-hmm. And it's just I said at the NFL previous, and this is one of the most intriguing seasons I can remember in the NFL, and that is before any of this had even happened. It's just been crazy.
We're not gonna bog ourselves down with the minutia of this, because we had the lengthy discussion last week with Mike, and of course with the Ray Rice stuff coming out. I'm sure we'll hear it on when you put it into basically a sports show. But Mike is resigning from the NFL, so if. No more talks about his San Diego Chargers from him anymore.
But here's the thing, though. He is watching the CFL religiously now, so that might actually work out. We can talk more CFL, I suppose.
Sure. We can talk about the crappy Eastern Conference of the CFL.
Really?
First place, 3-7.
Yeah, wow.
That's awful. How does that even occur? I don't – anyway. Basically what happened is – I think it was on Friday. Report comes out that Adrian Peterson is being indicted for injury to a child. He basically beat his son with what's called a switch, which before last weekend I had no idea what a switch was. I'm not even kidding you. When I saw the report, beat son with switch, I thought in my head, I'm like, he beat him with a light switch? He unscrewed it from the wall, and I didn't the phrase and the terminology of switch is foreign to me. I know what spankings are, and you know, you always get the tails of the wooden spoon, but I beating with a stick is foreign to me.
Well, let me explain really quick to our listeners, because I unfortunately, and I'm not going to go down this road any further than just to say this, that I am all too familiar with a switch. And what a switch essentially is it's a whip that's fashioned out of a tree branch. It's not a hard stick, say, like that you would throw for a dog to fetch or something along those lines. It's the real thin branch of a tree that, like I said, it works essentially like a whip. So when you get cracked with one of those things, believe me, you don't need to hit a kid more than one time with one of those. I don't think you should ever hit a kid with one of those, but to do it more than once is just mean. And that's a switch. So
yeah. And of course, they released the images from that. Which, if the Ray Rice thing taught us anything, visual proof sends people kind of over the edge when it comes to these things,
right?
Because if you just said, "Oh, he beat his kid with a switch," and, okay, maybe it happens, whatever. And then you see the lacerations and the welts, and it's like, well, that's pretty rough.
I just want to, just really quick while we're talking about the pictures, I want to add this in too. Having experienced this myself, those pictures are probably a day, two, maybe 3 days old, because immediately after a whipping with a switch, you've got these big raised welts on your legs, or wherever you get hit with it, for that matter, that kind of ooze this liquid, which I guess my girlfriend, who's a registered nurse, told me is actually plasma.
Yeah.
So it's what you saw is not as bad. Hard as this is to believe, what you see in those pictures is not as bad as it was. It actually, that was a great deal of improvement from, say, immediately thereafter when he whipped the kid with the switch. So that's something to think about, too.
And it may be a little worse, because I think the first thing I heard from it was that the kid's mom, not Adrian Peterson and the woman, aren't married. But I believe the kid's mom said that those pictures were taken a week after, supposedly.
Right.
So who knows? Either way, it's not good. So the Vikings then, they do the proactive thing, and we all celebrate them for it initially for deactivating Adrian Peterson on Saturday, because he went down to go turn himself in to Houston police, and he took a smiling mugshot.
Yeah.
Wants to tell you anything about it. And he gets sit down, and summarily the Vikings get their ass beat. They were probably going to lose the Patriots anyway, but they lose in pretty horrible fashion. So then it comes around to Monday, and news comes out that, well, the Vikings are now going to activate Adrian Peterson, and he's going to practice this week, and he may damn well play on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because he made statements saying that he caused an injury that was never intended. He didn't mean to hurt the child. His full statement is, you know, it's a lawyered statement. There's not much else to parse out of it. The Vikings themselves said that, you know, we see this as just it has nothing to do with a football player. It has purely to do with the facts we have. Like, currently, he's just being under investigation. We're going to take a step back, gather more information, let the due process play out. You know, we just, as of right now, we just see this as child discipline. So the Vikings are standing behind their guy now. And that's led to several sponsors dropping the Vikings, namely Radisson Hotels, who, you know, when you see any NFL press conference, you have the thing with the logos and sponsors plastered all over it. Radisson is the one that's behind the press conference sheet. So they're dropping out. Wheaties has removed Adrian Peterson from their website. Nike has removed all Adrian Peterson merchandise from Twin Cities area stores. Most notably, Anheuser-Busch, a.k.a. the people that make Budweiser and Bud Light, a.k.a. the $1.2 billion beer sponsor of the NFL. They're not pulling out just yet, but the statement they released makes you think which way they're leaning, and hopefully they think that it'll push the NFL in some way. Quote, "We are disappointed and increasingly concerned by the recent incidents that have overshadowed this NFL season. We are not yet satisfied with the league's handling of behaviors that so clearly go against our own company culture and moral code. We have shared our concerns and expectations with the league." And I guess I read this just before that Arian Foster had a little disagreement with Anheuser-Busch's stance on Twitter. But again, no need to get dragged down to the minutiae of all this. Just it's just one thing after another from the NFL, and I mean, people have listed over the past year, in this full calendar year, we've had bullying scandals, we've had the concussion scandals, we've had PEDs, we've had drugs, we've had pot, we've had domestic violence, we've had child abuse. We've had mishandled investigations. We have cover-ups. We have lying. We have hypocrites. It's all just so exhausting.
Did you throw the Aaron Hernandez thing in there, or was that in the last
year? Forgot. Yeah.
Let's murder. Let's throw that in, too.
Double murder.
Right. It's it's just – I don't know that if you sat down and thought, okay, what would be – what would you do to make the NFL's first 2 weeks of the regular season be as bad as possible? This is pretty much what you'd come up with. Mm-hmm. And it's just been it's exhausting. You're right. You just get fatigued from it. You get tired of listening to it. But I the Budweiser thing,
and that fatigue just like it leads to. I don't condemn anybody like Mike that wants to leave the league.
No, not at all.
You know, if I see no reason for them to not. But I mean, it's something we can talk about or not talk about. We like football too much, and I think we just have an easier way of compartmentalizing it. Like saying, yeah, I know these are terrible people, but the game is exciting, and you get wrapped up in it. So I don't know.
I look at it like this, and Mike, which we will, it will probably be up by the time this is out. But Mike, we did. I let him have his. He makes a statement basically explaining his entire position on it, and it's going to be a separate piece that you can listen to if you want to get the full 25 minutes of him explaining why he doesn't want to follow the NFL anymore. And like I told
of course,
you before,
Mike is very articulate. So
he really was. I mean, when he was done, I was really searching my soul going, why in the world am I not following him right out the door with this? But and the point I tried to bring up to him about why I stick around is that I don't know that I can blame the Cleveland Browns or the Green Bay Packers or the Indianapolis Colts or the game on the field for the actions of the people that run it.
And, right, yeah.
And I certainly don't want to diminish the severity of the things that have happened in the NFL by comparing it to this. But when everybody in the world knew that all the baseball players were roided up, it wasn't the game's fault. The game itself was still as beautiful as I've always felt it was. And I feel the same way about football. It's not the game. The game isn't at fault here. It's the people that run it. And that may seem like I'm rationalizing it or whatever, but I'm just not ready to step away yet. I guess I have hope that maybe that with all this exposure and all the things that we've seen and all the bad publicity and all that, maybe this will be the thing that gets the NFL to finally go, you know, enough. Enough of this. We don't care what kind of a person you are as long as you can play well and all that. So I'm holding out hope. But it's a tenuous relationship, to say the least, right now with me and the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, I always... The comparison I always go straight to, because it was something I dealt with for a while, was when Kobe Bryant was going through the rape allegations in Colorado.
Right.
People always ask me, you know, that weren't Laker fans or weren't Kobe fans or hate it. They're like, ah, Kobe's a douche. I hate Kobe. He's a rapist. I always said it was like, yes, I understand Kobe's a terrible person. He's not the most well-liked. He's not the nicest guy in the world. And, I mean, ultimately he was acquitted, but, you know, money probably involved there too.
Sure.
But it's always just like, you know, when he gets on the court, I just see him as a player. I wouldn't want to invite him to a birthday party. I wouldn't necessarily want to hang out with Kobe Bryant. I wouldn't want to hang out with Adrian Peterson. But I see that they're immense talents. And unfortunately, that's the way the Vikings also see it, in a sense, in wanting him to play. And being very kind of – they're not saying it, but they're saying it where he's a really good player and we want him on the field. And I can understand that. But it's a different sort of thing where they're the employer and their brand kind of gets hurt by him out there, whether, you know, whether you're going to win games or not. But it's tough to handle
sides. I think another way to look at it too is that – yes, we have seen some really awful stuff with the NFL over the past few weeks, actually over the past year. But, and again, and I'm not trying to rationalize this. I'm not trying to defend anyone. I'm not trying to diminish the severity of any of this. But the fact remains is that the overwhelming majority of the players in the league aren't like this.
Yes, yeah.
They're not. And I can't, and this is just my personal thing. If you want to walk away from the NFL, I completely understand. And like I said, I have a hard time trying to justify why I'm not doing the same thing. But at the end of the day, why should I let an idiot like Adrian Peterson or an idiot like Ray Rice or an idiot like Aaron Hernandez or any of the other idiots that we've gone over, Richie Incognito and the whole bit, why should I let them take away my enjoyment of something else? And yep. I'm just not ready to do that yet. Now, if the NFL, if this gets worse than it already is, and I can't imagine how that's possible, but I'm almost willing to bet you that by Thursday, I'm basically a sports show, it will have gotten worse. But
it'll be something else.
But right now, I'm not ready yet. I just don't know. I think Andy made a good point about this. He said that it's the product on the field is the main thing here. And it's just, to me, I'm not ready take away something that I enjoy over this. I'm not saying that I won't eventually. It may get to that point, but I'm not there yet.
Unless you have anything else to say, I think we're going to move away from the crime and the law and order portion of our program. So we'll go onto the field, and we will go into week two of this NFL season. And I don't know what to make of the league right now.
I don't either. It's if it's possible, I think it's nuttier than it was last year on the field. Now, granted, it's really nutty out the field, but on the field, it's just hard to get a real good read on anybody at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the standings, and there are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 2-0 teams. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 0-2 teams. And another 18 teams in the middle. I think I did that math correctly. 18 teams in the middle. 1-1
Yeah.
I mean, some of the 2-0 teams, you have your Buffaloes, your Carolinas, your Houstons, your Arizonas, your Cincinnatis. And then your 0-2 teams, you have teams like Indianapolis and New Orleans and Kansas City and even Tampa Bay, who we thought was going to be a little bit better. So it's odd, to say the least, through the first 2 weeks.
Well, let's say, okay, of the 0-2 teams right now, we like Tampa Bay to be better. We both picked New Orleans to make the Super Bowl. Who are we ready to bail?
Right.
Who are we ready to bail out on at this point? I'm ready to say we really missed the boat with Tampa Bay. No pun intended.
Yeah, they looked pretty bad. They looked pretty bad this weekend. I mean, to lose to the Rams like that at home, not a good look.
They've lost to a Derek Anderson led Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
And what's the guy's name that plays quarterback for the Rams?
Austin Davis.
Austin Davis led St. Louis Rams team. So
the Rams, who are now also down Chris Long, if you wanted the Rams season to go any worse.
So I'm ready to bail on them. I was listening to the BS report today, and they were talking. They're not sure New Orleans is good, and I'm beginning to wonder myself. And I'm not taking
that defense is bad.
Yeah, and I'm not taking a thing away from my Cleveland Browns. That game that they beat the Saints Sunday, that wasn't a we fell down and accidentally beat these guys. They beat them. I mean, they just played better football than the Saints.
Yeah. So let's start going through the week. Thursday there was a game. The story, of course, wasn't the actual game itself because the Ravens were on national TV. So it was happening in the background, basically a sports show, kind of a nondescript game, 26-6 Ravens, Joe Flacco with two TDs. And again, this guy, you know, thankfully the Bengals looked pretty good on Sunday when they played the Falcons. Otherwise, with the Browns win and now the Steelers and Ravens being 1-1, that just confirms this division is a whole lot of suck. And there's not much to do outside of maybe Cincinnati is a lot better than we gave them credit for, but the rest of the division is trash.
Well, I was really surprised that the Ravens came out and played as well as they did against the Steelers on Thursday. I was surprised the Steelers played as badly as they did because I think that I said that I like the Steelers to win that division this year, but maybe you're right. Maybe Cincinnati's better than we think they are because they've looked pretty solid in their first two games.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always known they've had the talent. It was always just a matter of if they could keep their heads together and play up to their ability. Maybe they're going to do that this year.
Yeah, and let's move on to that Bengals-Falcons game. The Bengals with a big win at home, 24-10 over Atlanta. You know, the Bengals, I think this is what Tom Jackson said yesterday, that the Bengals are the first AFC team since the merger to not have a turnover or a sack allowed in their first two games.
No kidding.
Yeah. And, I mean, not even have they not allowed any turnovers, they haven't even fumbled the ball and picked it back up. They have not accidentally – no fumbles have been forced against them so far through two games. So their defense has been pretty solid. Their offensive line has been solid. They're holding on to the football. And if you can hold – if you don't turn over the ball ever, that's usually going to lead to some victories. And we saw what the defense did to a Falcons team that exploded in that week one against New Orleans. Get held down to 10 points, and Matt Ryan only 231 yards and a TD.
Yeah, that was what makes me think that maybe the Saints just aren't good this year, because the Falcons hung, 37 on them, I think?
Yeah, 200, I believe it was like 400-something yards. And three touchdowns
right
from Matt Ryan in week one.
Yeah, and again, it's hard to compare, you know, doing the we'll piece this game versus this game and see, but they didn't look good at all against the Bengals. Now, granted, they were on the road and all that, but I think a team that, if New Orleans was as good as we thought they were, a team that beat New Orleans should have had a better time against Cincinnati, and they just didn't. They didn't look good at all.
No, and, you know, Andy Dalton looked good.
Yeah.
This was a good Andy Dalton game. I don't expect that every week, because I've seen Andy Dalton in the playoffs, but he looked pretty good.
Well, yeah, so, if these guys can play like this, especially in that division, they're going to have no problems. But maybe this is the year that they finally do really put it together. Now, I think we said the same thing last year, and they kind of did. I think, what, they go 11-5 last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's just more of the same for this year, but yeah, they look really solid right now.
Yeah, and I mean, just based on their schedule and the rest of that division, who knows? Maybe they get one of the byes just out of circumstance, you know, because of the rest of their division they have to play. But speaking of that division, Greg, explain the Cleveland Football Browns and how they actually beat the New Orleans Saints on the road.
They played better than the Saints, and I got to give credit. They were down, and they came back. They won the game, and at the end there, especially Brian Hoyer leading that last drive, the Cleveland Browns don't do that. What they do is they get close enough to go, hey, we might have a shot, and then they blow it. But they didn't this time, and they beat New Orleans. Now, as the season progresses, we'll see how big a win that really was, but they played good football. And the front seven, that defense, they didn't look great in the preseason, but I think they're as solid as people thought they were going to be this year.
Yeah, that defense really did play great against Breeze. They were rushing the passer all game. You know, Breeze still gets 237 and two touchdowns, but that's still kind of on the low end for Breeze.
Yeah, I think if you can hold Drew Breeze to 237 and two touchdowns, most times you're probably going to be all right. Uh-huh. But I don't know if the Browns are ready. I don't know if I'm ready to say, hey, you know what, as bad as that division is, they might rise up and get a playoff spot or, you know, be in the running, but It was encouraging because they played good football, and that's just not something you see a lot with the Cleveland Browns.
Well, you know what inspired the Cleveland Browns to victory, Greg?
What's that?
Johnny Manziel's first NFL snaps.
Unfortunately, I was bouncing around on my NFL Sunday ticket, and I did not see either of his plays.
You didn't get to see Johnny Manziel?
No.
He had a couple really awesome handoffs. He turned around and gave that ball off great. And it's funny because I was kind of flipping around the internet while the games were on, and Deadspin, they usually do these things where they post just GIFs throughout the day from the games.
Right.
And this headline just jumped out to me. Manziel throws first NFL pass. Since he's on the Browns, it was dropped. And it was actually a pretty good pass. I mean, here's the link to the GIF. He has a nice little rollout. You know, he stands back in the pocket. He probably leaves a little bit early, a little excited, first couple NFL snaps. But he rolls out to the left, finds a wide open, I think that's the tight end out there in the flat, and just, or that's the running back. But either way, he throws it right in his hands, can't come down with it. Would have been a pretty good play there for Johnny Football.
Yeah, I tell you what I don't like about this. I understand that, obviously, Cleveland Browns fans, they want to see Johnny Manziel play, but I don't like, even just for a couple plays, even for just a different look, this is Brian Hoyer's team, and you just got to leave it that way. Quit screwing around with this, because the guy finally starts playing good football, and now you start pulling stunts like this. But yeah, that was a typical Johnny Manziel play. Unfortunately, the receiver, that was a really catchable ball, too. Couldn't bring it in, but it's either Hoyer's team or it's not, and you just got to decide that.
And that was pretty evident in Hoyer's post-game interview. Did you see any of it?
No.
He was saying something like, you know, when the coach brought it up to me this week, of course I was a little ticked. But, you know, whatever's good for the team, it helps us win and blah, blah, blah. When somebody says that, they're not happy.
No.
If you say, well, you know, whatever's good for the team, that doesn't mean anything. That means that they don't like it.
No, well, that's the thing too, and he may be saying that to say all the right things, but we all know it's not what's best for the team to pull a stunt like that. What you can't,
no.
I forget, I never get the wording of this right, but if you think you've got two quarterbacks, you don't have any,
right,
or something
yeah.
along those lines. But
yeah.
Hoyer, you know, he almost staged a great comeback against Pittsburgh. He beat the New Orleans Saints. He's your guy, and until he shows he's not your guy, Johnny Manziel just needs to sit on the bench. And you got to quit playing to the fans, and we'll put him in for a couple plays because he's got a really high-selling jersey or whatever the reasoning was behind it. But I think Hoyer, I've never liked the Johnny Manziel draft pick, and I think Hoyer's the man, and they just got to decide. If he's not, then get him out of there and get Manziel in, but don't pull this stuff.
And then on the other side with the Saints, we kind of blew off the defense as saying, well, they're going to be able to score enough points.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the Saints made improvements in their defense last year. After 2 years ago, they had, you know, the worst defense of all time, statistically. And, I mean, they made some adjustments. They got some good guys in there. They got, what's his name, Jairus Byrd from Buffalo at safety to help kind of shore up that defense and make it a little bit better. But that defense hasn't been good in
no.
the first two games. And you know, even if the offense is good enough, even if the offense can be Super Bowl caliber, that defense is not Super Bowl caliber.
No, not at all. Not at this point. 37 to the Falcons, 26 to the Browns. And look, the Browns may not be as bad as we thought they were going to be going into the season, but any amount of ability they have is mostly on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a Super Bowl caliber team, you can't give up, what would that be, 50, 63 points in your first two games. That's not a good sign for a defense. And I granted they were both on the road, but for the Saints to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender, they've got to learn to win on the road.
Right. I mean, they could be 8-0 at home again.
Right.
And I mean, that's something that they do that. But when I looked at the schedule, I'd pointed it out to you, and you kind of laughed it off, like, no, the Browns are going to get knocked off. The Saints on the road in somewhere like Cleveland
yeah.
is against their strengths. And, you know, it's not cold yet. Obviously, they missed having, like, a terrible weather game. They could blame it on that. It was decent.
But, yeah, there. But you know what? It wasn't cold by Midwest standards. But if you live in Louisiana and you're used to the warm weather and all that, it was, I think, 58, 59 degrees at game time. So that's, you know, I mean, you understand. Let's say that right now you're in California where it's pretty hot right now. Let's say that all of a sudden tomorrow you're in 55-degree weather. It's going to seem damn cold to you.
Yeah,
and I think it has an effect, but I'm going to give them one more week. But if they don't turn it around, well, I know I'm going to give them to the next road game and see how they do there. But I'm almost ready to get off the Saints bandwagon at this point already.
Well, they're your Super Bowl pick,
and yours. Well, yeah, to win.
Right. I at least have them losing. Let's go elsewhere. And another team that we thought we were like, oh, good. Look at this. Good for you. But you're not great. Miami continues to do what they do and is bad on the road and seems to lose games in Buffalo for weird reasons. C.J. Spiller was pretty great. At least in a big run there for the Bills in the second half, not in total yardage. But Miami has this big emotional home win to kick off their season. We think that they're legitimate. We think they're going to be a wild card contender. And then maybe it's the Bills that are, you know, like they go on the road to Chicago. They beat Miami at home. Maybe the Bills are actually pretty decent. Maybe the Bills are the team that sneaks into that wild card spot. Another weird game involving the Dolphins.
Yeah, this is a game that if the Dolphins are going to take the next step that everybody thought they were going to take this year, this is a game you have to win.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not necessarily this particular game, but you can't go to a place like Buffalo, a team that really no one had as a playoff contender going into the season. This is just one of those games that you're supposed to win. If you're going to go 11-5, 12-4, these are the ones you got to get. And not only did they not get it, they didn't look good at all. Buffalo just dominated them, plain and simple.
And, I mean, last year we kind of always made fun as we looked at the standings down the season. Like, the Bills are still in the playoff race. Maybe the Bills are going to be still in the playoff race, and at the end of the day, they're going to be in the playoffs you know, the rest of this conference isn't great. And if they can put together efforts like they did last week and this week, they're going to be right there in the middle of conversation just like anybody else.
Well, they've got some talent on defense. Sammy Watkins, I think, is probably the real deal. He's probably going to be a very good receiver in the league.
Yeah, 8 receptions, 117 yards.
And, the running back, C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson, they're good enough to get the job done. And if E.J. Manuel... God, I hate to use the term game manager because I think it's ridiculous, but I don't want to see if he manages the games, but if he plays within his abilities, I think they could be tough. Now, again, it's only week two, but they are 2-0. They've beaten two teams that I don't think anybody thought they would beat. So maybe they're our surprise team this year, which I think would be great, especially with the news that they're staying in Buffalo and the whole bit. I think it would be awesome.
They'd be pretty good. Elsewhere early on, the Jaguars went into Washington, and the best thing that could have happened to Washington did. RG3 got hurt and is probably out for the season.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a full season of Kirk Cousins behind center, and he did what we thought he would be capable of all along. 250 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a 41-10 win. Washington's better off with Kirk Cousins at quarterback. He's a prototypical stand-up, throw the ball like a true quarterback.
We've been saying it since the very first episode of this show that if they're going to run that type of offense, the kind of offense they run, that Kirk Cousins is the better option for them. Because, and RG3, geez, I mean, that poor guy, he just can't see.
He's made of paper.
Apparently. But, yeah, and now again, it was against Jacksonville, so you've got to kind of take it with a grain of salt, but they didn't score much last week, and then Kirk Cousins comes in and they hang 41 up. Now, I know it's just the Jacksonville Jaguars, but 41 points in an NFL game, I don't care who you're playing, that your offense is getting the job done.
Yep, 41 points, 449 yards. They outpossessed Jacksonville by 19 minutes, didn't turn the ball over. It was a good performance.
Yeah, and that's – go ahead.
Well, and maybe without RG3, I know we talked about how bad the NFC East is. Maybe with Kirk Cousins kind of keeping this thing on the straight and narrow, maybe he can – make something of this, and maybe the Washington is a playoff team, or at least on the low end of the contenders.
I was just going to say that pretty much the same thing with Kirk Cousins in there.
Especially because how bad the rest of the division looked this
week.
Right,
but that's the thing. With Kirk Cousins in there, I think that improves that team by 30-40% just on that alone. And I said it before we started, it's not a knock on RG3, but it's absolutely a knock on RG3.
Yeah.
But Kirk Cousins is the better guy for that offense. And RG3, he's made out of paper. He can't hold up. He's shown that. It was just I think the Rams right now are thinking, wow, did we really get the better end of this deal?
Yeah. Don't they get two more picks next year, too?
I think something like that, yeah.
I think next year's the last year of those picks. But, yeah, it's when you have RG3 in there, you have to conform the offense to him.
Exactly.
And only to him. No matter who else you have, it starts and ends with RG3. When you put a more prototypical quarterback, like pocket quarterback like Kirk Cousins in there, then you can just make the offense. You make what you have. You put guys in positions to succeed or to use their talents correctly and not just, be around for whenever RG3 feels like not holding on to the ball. I think we said it all along that Kirk Cousins is the answer, and somebody else should have traded for him a while ago.
Yeah,
now you're missing out. Or maybe Washington knew what we all knew, that RG3 is going to be fun, but he's going to self-combust after a while. So we need to have this backup plan just in case.
And again, I don't have a thing in the world against RG3. I really do feel for the guy. He had the blown-out knee in his rookie season. He's been hurt all along. He's out again now, and it's just if you're going to have him as your quarterback, you have to, like you said, you have to have an offense that is geared towards him. If you put him in the offense that Washington's running right now, I keep wanting to say their name, and I'm trying to catch myself. But if you put him in that offense, the way that they're running it right now, he's not doing you any good because he's not that kind of player.
Yep. Also, Jacksonville note: when Chad Henne's your leading rusher for 3 carries and 17 yards,
ooh,
maybe you should fix that.
Are you a little surprised at Jackson? And I don't think any of us thought they were going to be 8-8 good this year, but are you surprised that they haven't improved a little bit from last year? Because they don't seem to have really improved at all. Maybe a little worse.
They looked good
in
the first half against Philly last week.
Yeah.
But besides that, I mean, both their games have been on the road. I don't know what you want from them. I mean, they might look better. They just don't have the talent level.
Exactly.
You know, and I appreciate the thought process behind putting Chad Henne there. And maybe after seeing them through two games and you see how bad the rest of the team is, maybe it's for good reason they don't want to toss Blake Bortles out there.
Right.
Have him just crash and burn like he could. Because, I mean, we saw him in the preseason. I think he's good.
Yeah.
I think Blake Bortles has the talent.
Yep.
The problem is if he has no talent around him, if he has no offensive line, if they have no running game, they're setting him up to fail. So maybe it is the smart move to just hold him out because you know that there's nothing you're going to get out of this.
Well, we saw it with – and again, I don't know if these guys were ever going to be good or not, but we saw it with David Carr with the Texans.
Yeah.
We saw it with Tim Couch with the Browns. You know, the guy that goes – first round or, you know, number one draft pick overall, whatever, top five draft pick quarterback, goes with a horrible team, gets his brains beat out. You just can't survive that as a quarterback for an extended period of time. So we'll never know if those guys are good or not. So I agree. If they're going to be this horrifically bad, might be the best thing to just leave Bortles on the bench so you get a little bit better. No point in wasting him.
Yeah. We'll stay within both those teams' divisions. And we agree to never talk about this team. But then they do something to make us have to talk about this stupid team. Especially when they knock off your irrational confidence Titans.
Yeah.
Your irrational confidence might be a little shaken after the Cowboys go into Nashville with a 26-10 win. DeMarco Murray with 29 carries and 167 yards.
Oh, he just ran all over them.
Yeah, time of possession, 41 minutes to 19 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
my irrational confidence is more than just a little shake, and it's all but destroyed at this point. Because that, again, that's a team. If the Tennessee Titans are to make the next step to maybe a playoff contender, that's a game they've got to win at home against the Cowboys team. It just isn't very good.
Yep.
But they just let DeMarco Murray just run up and down the field on him. And the Dallas defense, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, the Dallas defense held him down. Forced two turnovers. And I think the Cowboys found their game plan that, despite all their convictions to Tony Romo, hand the ball to DeMarco Murray as often as possible.
Yeah, he's a good back.
I mean, there's always been games where they try to do it and it doesn't work, or they're down, so they have to make Tony Romo throw. But if they can do what they did in this game and get DeMarco Murray established early and get him on the ground and churning out those yards and holding on to the ball and then finishing off the drives when they get the chance, that's the recipe for success. It's not in the hands of Tony Romo. It's in the legs of DeMarco Murray.
Well, that's and there's another good point to make with that, is that if you can establish the ground game with DeMarco Murray with the Cowboys, that frees up Dez Bryant a little bit more.
Yeah.
You all of a sudden, you're not so sure that they're going to be throwing on every down. And it really, I think that's a recipe for any team, but especially in the Cowboys' case, if you can get a running game out of that guy, you got to go with it. It makes you better. It gives you better chances to win. We'll see if they stick to it, because this is Jerry Jones and the Cowboys are talking about. So, you know, next week they might come out and go back to the run and shoot for something, for all we know. But right now it seems to be working for them.
Yeah. Staying in the Cowboys division, the Giants. Okay, look. I had said that maybe they're good enough to make a wild card spot. I am taking all of that back. Four turnovers on Sunday to the Cardinals, zero. And let's not throw this under the bus either. The Cardinals, on the road, marched into MetLife Stadium in the Giants' home opener with Drew Stanton behind center and won 25-14.
Indeed they did. And they are not.
I mean, the Giants got up to 14-10 in the third quarter. They were up. And then led up 15 points to Drew Stanton. Andre Ellington in the fourth quarter.
Well, you know, I think that it's time to just finally make the determination and decide that the Giants just aren't good.
No.
They came back last year. What'd they start last year?
0-6.
0-6, and they kind of put it together to have a nice run to finish the season. But again, not knowing what their schedule was last year, how much of that was a result of the teams they played as opposed to any real improvement? This is just a bad football team.
Yeah,
they just don't have anything to work with. And I don't think Eli Manning's not his brother. He's not good enough to raise mediocre talent to a level high enough to win. And it's just a bad team.
Yeah, he has no one to throw to. You know, Victor Cruz is he's a great wide receiver. But, you know, if all you have to cover is Victor Cruz, not a big deal. Rashard Jennings in the backfield, a lot of people hiked him peg for having kind of a breakout season for the Giants, but that's not happening so far. And the thing that ultimately overlies everything is Eli's forcing it, and the rest of the Giants aren't holding onto the ball either. And the first two games, it's been the turnovers that have killed them, just absolutely killed them. And that was what killed them at the beginning of last season too, when Eli was throwing all those picks.
Right.
So I don't know if it's necessarily an Eli problem, or if it's a talent level problem, or if it's a coaching problem. The Giants have a lot of problems. None of them are going to get fixed anytime soon.
No, even in that division, I don't think there's a lot of hope right now. Now, again, that's a very bad division, so you never know what might happen. But just seeing the way they've played the first two games, they're bad. They're bottom of the league level bad, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Also to note, the Cardinals, first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about
same
that?
With the Bills. The Bills are first place in the AFC East also. So,
well, yeah, you know, the Cardinals were one of those teams that we talked about it in the preview, that if they stayed at the level they were last year, they were going to be tough this year. And a lot of people thought the defense wasn't going to be as good this year. It looks pretty solid at this point.
Defense has been pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Drew Stanton, hey.
Michigan State.
Yeah. All of a sudden, Michigan State, the home for quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, right. We mentioned this one off the top of our discussion. Patriots beating up the Giants pretty badly in the Vikings home opener. And again, because with their stadium under construction, Vikings playing at the University of Minnesota. I thought it was actually pretty neat to see the Vikings playing outside in the sunlight.
Yeah, you were not old enough to remember when they actually used to play outdoors.
No, I know the Metrodome.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't remember. The new stadium's not going to be an outdoor stadium like the baseball stadium was, right?
No, it is. Remember, it's the
oh, that's right,
Church of Adrian Peterson.
It's the birdhouse. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, the Vikings. They looked pretty impressive in week one, but maybe the Patriots. Well, that's going to kill you every time. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. So are the Patriots back? Did they just have a bad week against Miami?
Look at the offensive numbers. Tom Brady, 149 yards and a touchdown.
Ooh.
That's not Tom Brady numbers.
No.
Now, Stephen Ridley had 25 carries and 101 yards. Good. Julian Edelman had more than half of Brady's receiving yards with 81. I mean, the Patriots' offense was great. This was all about the defense and the special teams for the Patriots. But
again, they're playing a Vikings team that has Matt Cassel under center and no Adrian Peterson. So how much stock do you put into this win if you're a Patriots fan? I don't know. Right. After the way Miami dismantled them, I'm not ready to say that. I think the Patriots might take a step back this year.
Yeah, and I think we're all kind of waiting for that. But, again, it's only 2 weeks. Some of these things you can kind of pin down and say this is what you know. Some of the things you just have to kind of wait for
right.
Bigger sample size. But as of right now, Patriots with a pretty big win on the road. Lions-Panthers. Cam Newton comes back, gets a win. The Lions come off a big win and lose.
Of course. That's what they do.
What? And there's something else I wanted to point out with this game. You put it in your top five uniform matchups this week.
Yeah.
I disagreed.
I know.
Too much sameness for me.
Okay.
Two cat-named teams.
Okay.
With silver helmets. Light shades of blue.
Right.
Accented by silver and black.
But you see, I'm not looking at it as – I look at it as like, okay, I like this uniform. I like that uniform. They played each other. That's the way I see it. I'm not looking at the entire picture because a lot of people bring that up about my best and worst list every week. They say, well, this game looked great because the colors, this, that, and the other thing. It's like, I don't see it that way. I understand that I do, and I completely understand your argument. And to
like,
be honest,
I actually thought that like Cardinals-Giants looked really good with the blue against the red and the white.
I didn't see any of it, of that one. And
it looked nice.
I don't like the Cardinals uniforms. I
know you don't, so it would never make your top five.
No, but It was an average week. There weren't really a lot of really great games. So that's kind of – that game being on my list was more a result of just there wasn't a lot to choose from so much as that I thought it really looked that great. And it dropped another spot when I realized that I'd completely forgotten about the Bears 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was just a – I don't know what happened there. No excuse.
Bad job by you.
No excuse. Bad job by me.
Cam Newton comes back 281 yards. Panthers, I mean, despite everyone thinking that they're going to be a regression team this year, that they're going to fall back a little bit, the Panthers have, I mean, they beat the Buccaneers in week one. Okay. And you beat the Lions. I mean, the Lions look good in week one, but the Lions also played the Giants.
Yeah.
You see how bad the Giants are. So, again, it's probably, and I mean, the Panthers, they won week one with Derek Anderson and so many things going in here. It's good for the Panthers to be 2-0. The Lions 1-1, take it or leave it, I guess. But only 7 points on the road for that offense is kind of
right. Well, see, I think, you know, everybody, a lot of people were really down on the Panthers this year. You and I were more kind of in the middle, like, yeah, they could get worse, but they could stay the same. I'm ready to say that I think they're going to be pretty solid. Are they 12-4 solid again this year? I don't know, but I don't think they're going to be nearly as bad as people initially thought they were going to be, because that defense still looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, and they're currently in first place, so take what you will out of that.
Well, you know, and you want to talk about bad divisions, the way that thing's shaping up right now. That NFC South. I mean,
yeah.
I haven't seen anybody in the NFC South that looks better than the Panthers yet.
No. Speaking of the NFC South, the Buccaneers lose at home to the Rams. They held the Rams to 4 field goals.
Okay.
And that's the positive.
Any argument on this one being on the worst looking game of the week list?
Oh no. Okay. The Rams going with all blue is awful all the time. I don't know why they do it. I don't know why they wear the white pants ever either. Wear your gold pants all the time, Rams.
Yeah, they really got a really, really solid look that they just insist on messing up. But yeah, this man, I don't know. This Tampa Bay team, the more I think about it, I think that I got caught up in all the hype right along with everybody else. But then I started thinking about it, I'm like, well, you know, they've got one of the McCowns at quarterback. Now, granted, you know, Doug Martin's out and this and that and the other thing, but they just haven't
looked. Bobby Rainey got 144 yards.
They haven't looked good. They just haven't looked good.
No.
Simple as that.
I mean, they haven't looked good and they haven't looked good.
Oh, no.
So.
But that's a team that you can just, you know, yeah, it's week two, and I'm kind of breaking my own rules here by saying, okay, this team's good, this one's not. But Tampa Bay in 2 weeks, both at home, mind you, haven't really shown me anything to make me think that they're just not getting the breaks or whatever. They just haven't been playing good football. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Moving on to the afternoon games, the marquee game of the afternoon, Seahawks Chargers.
That was a good game.
That was a good game, a very good game, a great bounce back game for the Chargers. 3 Antonio Gates touchdowns. 7 receptions, 96 yards for the big tight end. Phillip Rivers, 284 yards, 3 TDs. Outplaying the Super Bowl champs as Seahawks open their road schedule with a loss. And, you know, I mean, that's always been the question for Seattle, is the same kind of question you have about New Orleans. And we were all over the Seahawks when they beat up your Packers in the opening night, saying that they're just as good and they're going to repeat and this, that, and the other thing. They looked good, but the Chargers looked better on Sunday.
Well, I'm still with the Seahawks. I think that they are still probably the best team in the NFC. But in listening to Cousin Sal and Bill Simmons today, they brought up a good point. The heat. We talked about the weather with New Orleans and Cleveland.
Yeah, it's been hot down here.
Right. And, Seattle is not a place that's known for being hot out all the time or anything. And I just wonder if the weather played a role in that. But, and again, the Seahawks have shown that they do have some troubles on the road. San Diego's a good football team. I think we all agree that they're going to be better this year than they were last year. So I'm not putting a whole lot of stock. I mean, it's a great win for the Chargers. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think I saw anything that would make me too concerned if I were a Seahawks fan at this point.
Yeah. The controversy to come out of this game, besides the Chargers wanting to go with that awful all-white look that they use. Terrible. Some of the Chargers receivers decided, because this is going to be the thing this year, decided to poke the bear that is Richard Sherman after the game.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen saying that he's just a normal guy. He's not really a shutdown corner. Chargers receiver Malcolm Floyd saying that Keenan was lighting up Sherman. And then Sherman responded on Twitter by saying, LMAO, exposed, complete 3 passes, 0 touchdowns, 0 explosive passes. These guys make me laugh.
Well, I think that Richard Sherman had a pretty decent point there.
Although here the official unofficial numbers, Rivers was 5 for 5 with 60 yards when targeting receivers with Sherman on them.
Oh.
So.
Well, you know, that's the thing, though, with this kind of stuff. I mean, even the greatest cornerback in the game is going to have a bad day. And I don't know that 60 yards, he gave up 60 yards. I don't think I'd get too concerned about that. But when you're Richard Sherman and you act the way you do, this is the kind of stuff that's going to happen to you. People are going to run smack at you. And
yeah.
I don't know. The guy kind of annoys me, but I don't think that he was exposed. I think that he's still a pretty good player.
Yeah, he's still a pretty good player. And that's the kind of attitude you want from a perceived shutdown corner. I mean, was Deion Sanders any different?
No.
And was Deion Sanders pretty good?
Yeah, he was.
Okay. So, you got to have those attitudes that go up against the divas that are wide receivers, too. So.
Yeah, Deion couldn't tackle to save his life, but most of the time he didn't have to.
Exactly. Staying on the West Coast, Houston went up to Oakland and got a 30-14 win. The Texans are 2-0, leading the division. The Raiders are 0-2, as we thought. Ryan Fitzpatrick did okay. But did you see who caught the first touchdown pass from Fitzpatrick?
I'll let you do it. Go ahead, Chris Berman.
J.J. Watt beat the Raiders for the touchdown.
I heard that J.J. Watt said to someone that he thought he could be a who did he use a reference? He referred to a player.
Mike Vrabel?
No, it was an actual offensive.
That with the.
Yeah, I know, but this was an actual offensive player. Like, I could be as good a tight end as this guy is. Which, I, you know what? He's a pretty good football player. I'm not going to.
Probably could.
Yeah, but.
The jokes that came out were, and I looked this up too just because I was curious, because I have the Texans defense on my fantasy team, right?
Right.
Do I get points for J.J. Watt scoring touchdowns?
That was the first thing I thought when I saw that.
I do not get points for that.
No?
No, because he scored it on offense. So.
Right. But, I don't know what – I mean, the Texans were 2-0 at this point last year, too, and we know what happened after that.
Right. I don't remember who they played last week. Was it Washington last week?
Washington last week, yeah.
So, I mean, they beat the Washington.
It's going to take us a while to get used to that. That's okay.
I'm trying. It's hot. I'm delirious. This is a struggle.
Well, not only that, but we've been calling them their regular name for a very long time now. You can't expect us to just stop in one day.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, they beat Washington at home. They beat the Raiders on the road. Not a whole lot to pull out of it.
No,
they did force 4 turnovers on the Raiders, but
this Raiders team is as bad as they've been. I think that this is going to be a historically bad Raiders team.
Yeah. Derek Carr not terrible.
Yeah,
but did you see one of the turnovers that the Raiders had?
No.
James Jones.
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I did. I did see that, yeah.
And he grabs it, and it gets punched out of his hands. So he fumbles it. But he picks it back up, and he's running towards the end zone. He's going to get tackled right at the one, and oh, he lost the football. Fumbled the ball twice in the same play. That's the Raiders.
I just look at that team, and I just don't see much hope for anything. I mean, they'll accidentally win a couple games this year, but boy, are they awful. Just awful.
We'll move on up to Lambeau Field, where the Packers, in their home opener, were down 18 points to the New York Jets.
Yep.
Greg, what happened?
Well, it's that defense, man. Defense, they've got some problems on defense. And, you know, I think that the Packers were one dumb Marty Morningway timeout call away from losing that game. Because I don't know if you saw it, but Geno Smith hit, I don't remember who it was, for like a 50-yard touchdown. But unfortunately, Marty Morningway had called timeout, and he's not allowed to call timeout, but the referees, I guess, mistook it for Rex Ryan, and they called the timeout right before the play, but wow.
Yeah, but they battled back from that 18-point deficit, 346 yards and 3 touchdowns from Aaron Rodgers, as the Packers go on for a 31-24 victory, avoiding an 0-2 start, and what would have been a very embarrassing loss to the Jets at home.
Yeah, but if you're a Packers fan, you don't come away from that game feeling really good about your team just yet. Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson had an incredible game, but, man, there are just some problems with the defense on that team.
Jordy Nelson, 209.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and I had both of those guys on my fantasy team, so that really helped me a lot. But it just the Packers have still got some defensive issues. Eddie Lacy was pretty much shut down in that game. Uh-huh. That's a problem, too. But the Jets are pretty good run defense, so we'll see.
Then up at Mile High, the Denver Broncos hold on for dear life at the end for a 24-17 win. Broncos were up big at the end of the first half, 21-10 at half. And the Chiefs the Chiefs ended up with 36 minutes time on his possession, the Broncos 23, outgained the Broncos in total yardage and on the ground. Just a great kind of grind-out performance by the Chiefs in the second half, and if it wasn't for Andy Reid being Andy Reid in a close game under clock management, did you see the end of this game?
No.
Oh, my God. They're just like – they're looking at the clock. They're like, no, we're going to tie the game with no time left on the clock because we don't want Peyton Manning to have the ball. So they like milked this in the worst ways they could. Then all of a sudden it's – there's 8 seconds left and it's a fourth and goal.
Oh, my.
And then Alex Smith gets nearly sacked, throws the ball into the ground, and the game's over. So the Chiefs, they had their shot because they did the thing, well, we don't want to score too quickly instead of just going for – trying to score at all.
I understand that line of thinking. If you're in a tie game and you're in field goal range, if you need a touchdown, you can't take for granted that you're going to score. So you can't go, well, we're going to waste time until we score the touchdown because you're not sure if you're going to get it or not. It's just dumb.
And since they took so much time, what ended up happening is they're on like the 1 or 2 yard line. And so everything's more condensed and the Denver was on third downs. Denver was terrible. They just could not get the Chiefs off the field. They would keep finding a tight end or letting a big run game up the middle. And, you know, they were doing that all the way down the field. And then once the field got so compact, the receivers were covered and Alex Smith had nowhere to go and got sacked in the end. And they end up losing the game. And that could have been a big win for the Chiefs, but now they're 0-2. They're not even going to be close to that 8-0 start that they had last year.
No. And how much of this was the Broncos maybe looking past Kansas City to the Seahawks next week?
You got to believe that they are.
Because I'm sorry, but I know Kansas City was good last year, but we said last year that even their record was way better than they were. And this was in Denver. They should not have had this much trouble with the Chiefs. I believe a big part of this was they were already thinking about that Seattle game this week.
Yep. And who knows, maybe with the Seattle Chargers game, maybe Seattle was overlooking the Chargers.
Could have been.
Move on to Sunday night as the 49ers open their brand new stadium in Santa Clara. So NBC, those shots of the Golden Gate Bridge that are 60 miles away. Don't do that. It's like when they do games for the Cardinals in Glendale. They will show pictures of Tempe Town Lake. I will have you know Tempe is at least a 45-minute drive from that stadium.
Yeah.
It is not close. Don't do that.
And everybody that follows football knows that they are not in San Francisco anymore.
Right.
But I thought the stadium looked nice, so it looked like a good place.
Stadium looks nice. It's kind of corporate and sterile. It has a weird makeup where they have all the luxury boxes stacked on top of each other on the camera side of the field. I don't know. It's weird. It'll be interesting to see what happens when they play when the Kings and Sharks play there in, February, I guess it is.
Okay.
But either way, 49ers, they're up 17-0 in the first half. And it looks like the Bears are going to be dead in the water again. They're going to go 0-2. But they kind of man up at the end of the first half with a great drive to finish the half. Jay Cutler gets a helmet to the chest.
He got annihilated.
He got killed.
Yeah.
But he battles through it, and Brandon Marshall's playing on a hurt leg. But they get a one-handed amazing touchdown pass to end the half. And that seemed to really kind of spur the Bears forward. They played much better defense in the second half, scored 21 points in the fourth quarter, and end up getting out of the fire in San Francisco with a 28-20 win and a 1-1 record now.
I will say this. I got to give Jay Cutler credit because he just got destroyed on that hit.
Yeah.
And all he did was get up and just kick the daylights out of the 49ers for the rest of the game.
Yep. 4 touchdown passes for him, 3 to Brandon Marshall, who was playing on a hurt ankle, like I said. So a great bounce back for Cutler in that Bears offense. And on the other side, Colin Kaepernick looked like the bad Colin Kaepernick that you and I tend to hold on to.
Yep. He's a guy that he has flashes where you go, wow, he can really do some neat stuff. But unless you can, you've got to have something else to go with your neat stuff, or you saw it on Sunday night. But I got to give all the credit to the Bears in that game because, man, they were down and out, and that was it. And they just came back, and some of those interceptions were just amazing. But
yep.
the good for the Bears. And the 49ers, I think I said that I didn't see them maybe not even being a playoff team this year. And what I saw on Sunday night, I'm going to stick with that.
We'll move on to Monday.
Yeah.
look, the Colts looked a lot better in the first half. They were running the ball. They played extremely well in the first half to come out with a 17-6 lead going to halftime. And then they go into half, and all of a sudden the Eagles remember that they're run by Chip Kelly and they have a torrent pace of an offense. And then Trent Richardson can't run the ball anymore. Andrew Luck is getting rushed and just cannot get any passes off. He threw for 3 touchdowns, but he got almost nothing going in the second half. And the Colts defense, they look gassed. They look bad. They could have won this game if it weren't for a couple really bad calls at the end. There was pass interference on the Andrew Luck interception. There was a horse collar on a third down that wasn't a horse collar. He grabbed him by the jersey. The shoulder of the jersey, not even inside the neck.
Yep.
But even so, even with those penalties, the Colts just couldn't find a way to stop the Eagles late in the game. And the Eagles come back and pull one out of Indianapolis with a 30-27 win, going to 2-0 and putting the Colts at an 0-2 start.
That worries me a little bit with the Colts because they, 2 weeks in a row now, I mean, they got down early at Denver and came back but fell short. This time they got ahead and let it get away from them. They're just, they haven't shown me the flashes that we saw last year where they would play flawless football at times. But
I saw that flash in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, they're playing one of those perfect games that they play. But
right, and that's the type of Colts team that that's how the Colts work best, is when they're able to establish the run game and use the play action, and Andrew Luck's commanding things, and he can roll out, and he can do everything that he wants to do. But once the run game stopped working in the second half, and all the Eagles had to do was key on Andrew Luck, and they kept him off the field with just how fast the Eagles' offense was moving. It was just ripping holes through the Colts' defense. So it's hard to see the Colts start 0-2, but I mean, they're two close wins, the two good teams in the Eagles and Broncos.
Right.
So that's the one thing you could take solace out of it. I still think they're the best team in the division.
Yeah,
I
definitely
think they're
going
to bounce back just fine, but 0-2 still not fun to look at on the standings board. But that is week 2 in your National Football League. Move over to the college side of things. Again, just a weird week of football, even at the college level, and with so much up and down, and now some injury news playing into some potential up and down, there's not a whole lot of good teams in college football this year. There's a good handful, like 6 or 7 at the top, maybe, definitely at least 4 or 5, but the rest of college football is kind of a mismatch from like even the rankings. Anybody from like 9 on down to 25 could probably beat each other in every given week.
Yeah, it's I think how many SEC teams are in the top 15 this week?
Well, you have 5 SEC West teams in the top 10,
right,
of the AP poll.
Oh, wow.
So 5 teams from one division of a conference in college football are in the top 25, which is insane. I don't know if that's just SEC bias or just a lack of good teams elsewhere, but
well, you know, going down the list, I mean, there might be a little bit of bias, but I don't know. It's a weird season. I don't know what to make of it yet. I mean, Florida State's still number 1, Oregon's at 2, but
yeah.
It's like you said, once you get down to about 10 and on down the list, it's pretty much interchangeable. I don't know if you could interchange BYU with, say, a Georgia, but, but yeah, you know, it's interesting. And
yeah,
I don't know where we're starting at, but USC disappointed me greatly this weekend.
Yeah, we'll get to them in a second. Well, let's just start at the top. Florida State had a bye, so they escaped by with nothing to interfere with them this week. Oregon, they led up 14 points to Wyoming at home. Are you concerned?
Nah.
Alabama, they let up 12 points to Southern Miss at home.
Meh.
Oklahoma with a 24-point win over Tennessee. And we move on to what was the game of the weekend, at least in terms of ranked teams. Georgia, South Carolina, and just when you want to put South Carolina out of their misery and just forget about them,
yep.
They man up and they play very well at home with a late 38-35 win over the Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia was number 6. They fall down to number 13, and South Carolina moves up to number 14 after being 21 the week before. A little up and down their performance by South Carolina, but here we are.
I'm not sold on
a mush in the SEC East.
I'm not sold on South Carolina. It's a nice win. I wasn't entirely sold on Georgia coming in. I think they're both good teams, but either way, this game would have fallen. It wouldn't have impressed me enough to really think that much more highly of either one of them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
They're both good, but they're not up there. I don't think either one of them at any point before any of this happened were playoff contenders this year.
No, I mean, the rest of that whole side of the SEC is pretty bad. You have Georgia, South Carolina at the top. Missouri is 3-0 currently. But that side of the conference also includes Kentucky and Florida and Tennessee and Vanderbilt. So it's not the best that the SEC has to offer.
And just on Vanderbilt really quick, I mean, I know that James Franklin was a good coach, but good Lord. I mean, yeah. How did they get so bad so fast?
It's amazing to think about. But back on this game, Georgia ran the ball effectively, but South Carolina was able to pass well. And I guess Steve Spurrier really has it out for Georgia in his career. I think he's something like 17-10, I think it is, against Georgia in his career. And 5-5 in South Carolina. Apparently he hates Georgia a lot. That's what I heard this week, but who knows? It's all it does is mess up the ACC East a little bit, and neither of those teams are going to beat whoever comes out of the West.
No.
So,
no.
So congrats on that.
I mean, it's certainly possible, but I would be a pretty big upset if it happened.
Yep. Number 7, Texas A&M, with a decent win at home against Rice. They move up to number 6. And number 8, Baylor. They went on the road to the University of Buffalo. It was a blackout at the State University of New York, Buffalo.
Wait, so you're telling me that everybody wore all black at the game?
Yeah.
Well, that's a novel concept. I wonder why no one's thought of that before.
And the Buffaloes, they wore all black.
Jeez, that's kind of neat. I wonder if that's going to catch on.
Yeah, Baylor came in and put 21 points in the first quarter, 35 points in the first half, and ended up with a 63-21 victory on the road at Buffalo. So good on you, Baylor Bears.
Yeah.
You move up to number 7. Number 9 last week was USC. And we were behind them. They were your pick to win the Pac-12. We were behind them after they beat Stanford this last week with an impressive win out on the road at Stanford. But then they go across the country to Boston College, play an early game, and Boston College just went straight at the Trojans. The BC just ran right down USC's throat and got up. SC was up 10-0 after the first quarter, but Boston College puts up 20 points in the second quarter and dominates there towards the end of the game for a 37-31 victory. They storm the field, they knock down the goalposts, and they knock off number 9, USC.
That was a shocker to me because I don't think Boston College is that good. But USC traveling east, I get it and all that. But I still like the Trojans to win this conference. This is, unfortunately for them, it's an out of conference loss, so it doesn't hurt them. It's going to hurt their playoff chances, I think, unless some things change. But I still like them to win the conference. But wow, that's one they should have won. And all credit to Boston College, they got the job done.
Yeah, they played hard, and I think that's the thing that's interesting. I mean, because you mentioned it, that a lot of these teams that we see knocked off are not playing well, and some of these teams that are beating other teams and kind of working on the strength of schedule, you're starting to hear those conversations about hurting the playoff chances, and it's something we'll talk about a little bit when we get into talking about the Big Ten, because I think the Big Ten is taking themselves right out of that playoff talk.
Yeah,
big loss there for SC on the road. Probably a letdown loss just after the way that how emotional the win was at Stanford.
Exactly.
Cross country.
You got to go.
And it's early in the morning.
Right.
And BC's up to play. And I mean, you're USC. You got a target on your back all the time. But it's something that I heard somebody else brought up. Can you think of any team in the past, like, I don't know, 10 years that has had the field stormed on them more times than USC?
No. Probably
it's
not.
Weird, right?
Yeah.
Because even when SC is decent, people, when they win, they storm the field. And the USC has these weird losses from time to time. I mean, when it's not the Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush, Pete Carroll era and they're going undefeated, they'll have one or two losses. And they'll have these weird ones where they, you know, just lose to a team that they know well that they should beat, but they don't.
Yeah, you know, and it's wild because, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's like for some – I guess maybe beating USC is just a notch in the belt that you don't get with anybody else. I don't know. Well, that's a good point. I never thought of it, but yeah, it seems like if you're a team that – if you're an unranked team that beats USC, you got to storm the field, I guess.
Yeah. USC, they fall down from 9 to number 17. Number 10 was the Louisiana State Tigers, LSU, for the uneducated.
Looking sharp in their purple this week.
Looking sharp in their purple as they knock around University of Louisiana Monroe. 31-0, they move up to number 8. Notre Dame and Purdue in the Shamrock Series at the Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Notre Dame wearing their cool Under Armour jerseys. Purdue with train tracks on their helmets.
I didn't see the train tracks.
Yeah, Purdue had train tracks on the helmets.
Hey, cool,
as their stripe, as their helmet stripe, because, you know, the Boilermakers. Notre Dame wins 30-14, holds off a late Purdue push. They didn't score any points in the second half, but they threatened several times. So Notre Dame moves up to number 9 because they're Notre Dame and they're 3-0.
I guess.
I, you know, they're not great.
No.
Also a team that's not great. Right behind them in the rankings last week was number 12 UCLA. So they play Texas, who got their doors blown off, but they play in Dallas in Cowboy Stadium, and UCLA holds on barely 20-17. If it wasn't for a late drive by backup Jerry Neuheisel, yes, Neuheisel, as in the son of Rick.
I was just going to ask. Okay.
Yes. Early in the game, Brent Hundley went down, hurt his elbow on his non-throwing arm, and UCLA just kind of struggled the rest of the game. They had a big drive late by Jerry Neuheisel to lead them to the victory as they hold on to get to 3-0. And again, you know, it's one of those things where you keep saying, well, they're winning the games. Yeah, they're winning the games, but UCLA has not impressed anyone
I
can think of.
I'm not buying them. I haven't been buying them all along, and they're struggling to beat teams that if they're as good as first their preseason ranking would make you think, then they shouldn't be having trouble with the games that they're having trouble with. It just shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I'm just not sold.
Yeah, UCLA stays at 12 for now just because they're undefeated. They'll lose sooner or later, and they'll get knocked off. But I have some news once we talk about Arizona State that may delay that knocking off. Ole Miss with a big win over Louisiana Lafayette. Stanford with a big win over Army, because all these big schools think it's cool to beat up on the service academies. And here's something that, you know, isn't good for Ohio State's strength of schedule. Virginia Tech.
Yes.
Losing to East Carolina at home.
Yeah.
We've said it before, East Carolina's not a bad team, but to lose for Virginia Tech to lose at home after a big win over Ohio State, you know, transitively, it's not directly, but the Big Ten's get a couple notches taken out of their belt.
Well, here's the thing. I think at the start of the season, I said Ohio State's probably 10-2. Then after they lost to Virginia Tech, I said, okay, 9-3 will be a good season. Right now, my feeling on the Buckeyes is they're looking at probably 8-4, maybe even as bad as a 7-5 season. This is not a good football team. Despite what they did to the poor Kent Golden Flashes on Saturday, they're not good.
No. So Virginia Tech falls out of the rankings with that loss. Arizona State, very kind of streaky this season within games. I mean, they're 3-0. They go up 14, then they allow 14 while they score 10. Then they score another 14, and they end up holding on to win 38-24 at Colorado for their third win of the season for the Sun Devils. But they've been streaky in every single game they've played. And the thing that's more concerning is quarterback Taylor Kelly injured in this game against Colorado. ASU has a bye week this week. But even so, apparently he's not going to be ready for the U.S. or the UCLA game in 2 weeks. So concern for the Sun Devils, even though they're 3-0.
Well, here's the thing. I guess that if you can anything to come out of that is that the backup will have 2 weeks to prepare, which will help.
Yeah, but I mean, we've seen how bad UCLA has been, and we said that ASU is probably the best bet to knock him off first. And then the other thing I heard is that he may not even be ready for the SC game the week after that.
Ew.
And SC looks primed and ready to be beaten too. So ASU was going to be a major player in this, and with Taylor Kelly out, it's going to be a hurt to their chances in the Pac-12 South.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you never know. But I don't know how good their backup is. I mean, sometimes the backup can come in and you can get wins. Maybe not as dominant as you would have been with your number one quarterback, but I don't know what ASU's number two quarterback situation is.
Neither do I.
So we will see.
ASU, they move up to 15. Let's see. Missouri with a big win over UCF. Louisville goes on the road to Virginia and loses. Virginia, very good defensively so far in the beginning of this season. Probably should have beaten UCLA in that first week, and then maybe they'd be – they're probably going to be ranked next week, but they could be higher up, but they just beaten UCLA and made us all happy. And then to close out the top 25, or at least on the Saturday, Ohio State, as you mentioned, with a big win over Kent State, 66-0. Ohio State just they schedule all these in-state schools just for fun, don't they?
They need to get wins at this point. But yeah, it's Kent State, it's Toledo, I tell you what,
Ohio.
Yeah, they've got Cincinnati in 2 weeks, and I don't know if I'd be too. I wouldn't get overconfident about that game if I'm the Buckeyes. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think Cincinnati's great or anything, but the way the Buckeyes have been playing, wow.
Yep. Actually, despite the win, the Buckeyes dropped down to number 23, probably because of the Virginia Tech loss also.
Right.
And the other team in the top 25 that played, BYU, beat up Houston 33-25 on Thursday as they both wore Stars and Stripes September 11th helmets.
Yeah.
Good for college football.
Right.
But I mentioned the Big Ten, and I'm going to talk about some of these games that were out of conference, or not necessarily out of conference, but not in the ranked portion. Maryland loses to West Virginia at home. Indiana loses to Bowling Green.
Ooh.
Michigan with a big win over Miami, Ohio. And the big stunner, because we thought that this team was going to go far and away and probably start 10-0 and have a chance to sneak up on some people, Iowa loses at home to Iowa State for the second time in 3 years as the Cyclones go in and beat up the Hawkeyes 20-17 on a last-second field goal. That was I saw the end of that game. Amazing fight there by Iowa State at the end, and Iowa, a lot of people's dark horse there in the Big Ten, not so much.
The Big Ten is a bad conference. Their best chance at having a real good solid shot at a playoff spot was Michigan State. And they may still be, but now you're getting closer to the conference schedule. I don't know that Michigan State's got anything left that's going to get them a signature win.
Yeah, Michigan State's going to have to be just demonstrably better than the rest of the conference to prove anything.
Right, and they had their shot at Oregon, but let's see, Michigan State's got Eastern Michigan, Wyoming, Nebraska, Purdue, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio State, Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State. I mean, there's just not enough. I don't think there's enough on there. You know, we talked at the college football preview, could two SEC teams make it in? And the way things are shaping up right now, that's a distinct possibility because the Big Ten is just not good.
Yeah. Other teams that lost, TCU beat Minnesota pretty big at TCU. Illinois got crushed by Washington. Purdue lost to Notre Dame. Nebraska won big at Fresno State. And the Big Ten did open up its schedule with the very first game, Big Ten game, at Rutgers. Penn State came out with a 13-10 victory over the Scarlet Knights.
Yeah. It's a bad conference. I don't see. Unless Michigan State just goes on an incredible tear. Again, we don't know what the rest of the conferences are going to do. But right now, looking at it here, was it week four? I guess.
Yeah.
The Big Ten looks like they're going to be on the outside looking in for the playoff this year.
That's college football this week. I think that means we're done.
I think so.
Any final thoughts on the week of football?
I guess if I had a final thought, it's just that I wish we could have NFL football without this horrible stuff hanging over it, but it is what it is.
My final words, go Colts, go Sun Devils. For Greg, I'm Zach. This has been basically a football show. Find us wherever you can find us and listen to basically a sports show and catch us next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Basically a Football Show. You can subscribe to the show on Spreaker, Stitcher, and iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at BA Football Show. Follow Basically a Sports Show on Twitter at Basically Sports. And follow Basically a Geek Show at A Geek Show. You can check out the entire podcast lineup on our website, basicallyasportsshow.com. Once again, thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time right here on Basically a Football Show.
Try again.